It was a delight for me to meet, finally, Ed Owen, the popular tuba player of the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra. Well aware of him, of course, in advance of his size and skill, he is very much aware of the world he lives in, the countryside, the people he meets, his students, and how everything he does is carefully thought out. Brought up in Jonesboro, where his parents are missionary Baptists, church music a major part of his background and inheritance. But his awareness of the world he lives in is clearly a major part of his upbringing.
Well, I did have a lot. We spent at least a week every summer at the lake on Lake Ouachita. So I spent a lot of time in the woods there and a lot of time skiing and fishing and still do that. We don't go to Lake Ouachita anymore, but at least 1 week every summer we're down at Lake Catherine now. I love to hike, love to spend time outdoors, and you breathe differently. You know, when I go up on top of that mountain overlooking the dam at Lake Catherine, I breathe differently there. So, yeah, it's interesting that you speak to that, because I did spend a lot of time outside and still do.
Going back to growing up and going into school and things like that, was music always part of your laughter and part of your background?
As far back as I can recall, yes, it was, because Mom used to have to get onto me at the dinner table sometimes because I was constantly humming or singing or whistling. She's like, "Sweetie, let's eat now." Right? and my dad was a pastor at First Missionary Baptist Church in Bryant, and that's where I actually started my musical training in the children's choirs there. So
it was musically singing that was the initial one.
That's correct. It seems like everything that I would touch would sound musical to me, and I would want to make an instrument out of it. Mm-hmm. From elementary music classes, and began taking piano lessons in eighth grade from my elementary music teacher. And my mom said that, the typical thing of, beating on the pots and pans, all of that kind of stuff, everything seemed musical to me from the earliest that I can remember.
Well, did that get you exploring the instruments and looking at them and wondering what they sounded like and which ones you were most attracted to?
Absolutely. At First Baptist, where we had the children's choirs, it wasn't just singing. We did all kinds of the rhythm instruments and things. As we would learn rhythms and all of that kind of stuff. So it was a really good curriculum there. We weren't just singing. We were truly learning about music, and I think that's where the bug started for me. I started playing tuba in sixth grade in the band. I think it kind of chose, I know it's stereotypical to say that the instrument chose you, but I didn't really like any of the other instruments. I actually wanted to start on the euphonium or the baritone, and ended up moving to tuba before I actually ever started on the baritone. They needed somebody to do that, and I was willing. It seemed to be my voice.
Mm-hmm. Which makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about laughter? Because this is something that people seem to associate with you as well. What about in school? Find yourself getting into trouble because you shouldn't have been laughing.
I definitely got in trouble for being the stereotypical class clown. I had really patient teachers. I'm sure that I had some sort of attention problem, but I had really, really patient teachers that knew when I needed to go. I can remember being at Chico Elementary School in Little Rock in the second grade, I believe, and my teacher would say, Eddie at the time, you need to go to the library and do some exercises and then come back. I would go off, do my exercises, come back, and I was fine. But I didn't necessarily get in trouble for things. She just knew, hey, he needs a little bit of exercise, work some of this energy out, And all of my teachers were like that, and I'm very thankful for that.
Well, they were very understanding.
They were very understanding. And if you're listening, I love you all.
Being given that freedom to relax and get unwound, I guess, did you have special exercises? Did you have special thoughts? Did you have special things that you just felt you had to express somehow?
Not that I recall. I just needed to I don't know, do some jumping jacks or something. I wasn't ever told anything specific to do, but just to go do some exercises. And
well, I'm still intrigued by the laughter and the instruments and the music and what you did in the outdoors growing up, that maybe there was laughter in those instruments that you yourself hadn't realized and were absorbing it and suddenly found that certain instruments gave you that. And you reciprocated in a way that gave you something special out of some instruments. So even though you ended up with the tuba, were there other instruments that appealed to you for certain reasons?
Well, like I said, I took piano lessons starting in eighth grade from my elementary music teacher. And I think that was mainly so that I could participate more in what was going on at church. Mainly started out to be able to play hymns. I certainly gravitate towards music that has that, at least a little bit of a humor element to it. But it seems like I can find that even when it's not really intended. And certainly, I mean, the stereotypical idea of a tuba is that most people think of, the sousaphone in the marching band. You know, it's pa, whatever, right? And unfortunately, we only get the because somebody else has the pa, as far as that goes.
So you did marching band as well?
I did in high school and college. That's what playing the tuba is actually what helped put me through college. I was very thankful for that as well. I enjoyed it. It has its place. It was not absolutely my favorite thing to do, but it was fun. Mm-hmm. I like going to football games. I'm still associated with that. A lot of my students, are in the marching band, and I get announced for the marching band at Arkansas State. So it's fun, has its place.
So they all have their place then. Personality and instruments themselves are almost biotypical. It's the sort of thing that when you begin to look at music, written music, listening to other people playing music, you would have an awareness of a world that has to have music and how many places don't have music. And does that come into your growing up as well, that people would not realize just how important music was?
I don't think so. Not in my family, at least. I've always tried to help people realize how important music is, and it just saturates our lives.
And some teachers have that awareness that you obviously had with people who were able to let you unwind in time to come back and get to the nib of what you were actually supposed to be. Does that come back to you as well when you see it in somebody else that you can help in that respect?
It does, particularly with my students. But most of the teaching that I do is one-on-one. So I develop a pretty close relationship with the students and can generally tell when something is going on in their life. They walk into my studio and sit down, and sometimes it's the stress of midterms or the stress of final exams, but other times that there's something going on in their life, and you just want to say, okay, hold on for just a second, tell me what's going on. Maybe we just need to listen to some music for a little bit, because sometimes just listening to something, and music is such a powerful art. It can really affect our emotions in very positive ways, can help us through something. So I think that I try to be in tune with, pardon the pun, in tune with the students and see, what their needs are. I'm teaching students through music, but I think I'm teaching life lessons with them as well.
So you say most of your teaching is with one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have a class where they would be affected by whatever music was played.
Well, I do. From time to time, I teach a fine arts music class, which is a music appreciation class. I usually teach that in the summer, and then I teach a research class in the fall, which can certainly be those of us that have been in a master's program or a doctoral program, the research classes tend to be a little bit dry, okay? I start that class out every time with some music. Let's remember, yes, we're going to do some research and we're going to learn all of these kind of tools, but let's remember why it is that we're doing what we're doing, why we decided to do this in the first place, even if it's just a couple of minutes, you know. Don't forget to listen. And I do that in the fine arts music class, because that's to the general student population, you know, and they all like music. It's why they're taking that particular class. Mm-hmm. They can take a visual art class or a theater arts class or music. And most people like music. They think that I'm going to try to cram my music down their throat, which is certainly not the reason for that course. But it's more about, back to what we were talking about earlier, about the difference between listening and hearing.
Mm-hmm.
They hear things all the time, but the difference is intent. Are you really listening to what it is that you are listening to, right? The music that you're hearing. So I have them do a song project on a piece that they like, and they have to identify the verse, the chorus, all that kind of stuff. And what it is that you hear. And one of the first things that I do in that class is have them perform John Cage's 433. We talk about the reasoning behind that piece and the listening and hearing. And I have them go outside, go somewhere and sit for 4.5 minutes and just write down the things that you hear. And sometimes I'll even do it in class when it's a face-to-face class. Let's just stop. Let's listen for sure. But I also do that I do have a studio class where all of my music majors meet. We certainly will listen to music. It may be things that I've got coming up in one of the orchestras that I perform with, to have them listen to that. It may not have anything to do with tuba, because I listen to a lot of vocal music, and I think that comes across in my playing a lot because of my saturating my ears with that. I was listening to on the way down today. I was listening to Cecilia Bartoli and Mario Lanza all the way here. It has nothing to do, it does, but it has nothing to do with anything that I'm working on right now. But it's in my head.
So. That's an interesting combination.
Yeah. Well, I bought those CDs actually on my trip last week when we went to New York with my family. When we were heading out, we went to Hoboken to Carlo's Bakery, and I walked up the street and there was a CD store, and I was like, I've got to go in here and had some CDs on clearance, and picked them up, and that's what I listened to on the way home.
So, will you play it in class for any of your students?
I probably will at some point, because there are certain things in their singing and other singers that I want them to. I want them to grasp the sense of phrasing and shaping that these singers do.
And those particular singers, because they're so specific.
They are, and I'm listening to them on sheer happenstance that I had those CDs with me, but I listen to a lot of different ones. And I have, as one student in the fine arts music class said years ago, I have some of those on the big CDs from the 70s, records. I wanted to say that again slowly, the big compact disc from the 70s. One of the things that I'm really particular about in my teaching, beyond just the mechanics of, you know, producing the tone and all of the fundamentals, is phrasing. It's so very important that they know where is the musical line going? Where is the end of this phrase? You know, a lot of times I will pick a book up off my bookshelf when they've played something for me, and I'll read it to them, whatever, just open up to a random page and start reading to them, and I won't pay attention to any of the punctuation, and it just sounds horrid, you know, like they can't understand. And then I go back and pay attention to the punctuation that's there, and they get it. All right, you're not playing that music in a way that I can understand it, because you're ignoring the end of the phrase. You've got just like a bunch of run-on sentences, right? Or you're chopping it up. So listening to singers, I think, is really, it can be very obvious. And it doesn't have to be classical singers. You can listen to, well, most of the time it needs to be. But they're not breathing in the middle of a word, you know? Mm-hmm. They're giving a complete thought. It just doesn't make sense to do that.
And that's what you're aiming for. The meaning behind what you're doing.
Right.
That you don't do a note just for blowing the note. It's because it's part of something else that is meaningful.
And there's intention there, and, yeah. and it takes time to the music. I think has to marinate with you. You have to be with it for a while. You know, this is not just I'm going to learn this week. You know, you have to flood your ears with it.
That's an interesting thing. The marinade of music, which particular wine, which particular specimen or specific flavor.
Right.
And flavor is certainly part of music. Many words that jump from one thought, one intention, can still mean the same if it's said in the same way, in a different way. But certainly to describe something that means a lot to you, that you would like people to think that they would be able to do something equally comforting sometimes, and other times just to enjoy thoroughly the humor, the wit, the kindness, all the emotions we feel come through in music.
They really do. And it does take that time for flooding your ears with that music and really diving into more than just the mechanics of the music, again, the phrasing and really experimenting. I think, you know, all of these things, these words that we hear associated with a science fair, experimenting and doing these things, we do that in music all the time. We just don't do a good job of explaining it that way. You know, we're experimenting with balance and maybe a different tone color here and maybe a different way to shape this phrase. We do that all the time.
And it comes so instinctively, it spreads so easily up to other people because they respond, if you watch them, physically as well. You'll see it in their body movements, in their eyes, in what they're doing themselves when they're listening, because there's something that almost demands a reciprocal movement. You just don't stand or sit unless you're told to.
It's hard to sit still sometimes with music. You want to move to it. It's odd to see someone playing music and to be like totally still, no movement at all.
So back to the next concert in the Inspiration of the Ink series. You spoke to Philip about a particular piece that you would very much like to have come out in this particular series.
Yes.
What is this piece, and what is it that made you feel that it had to be part of this? Because the Ink series, I think, is one of the best of the series of the season, and I love them and have learned so much through what the individual who helps pick that particular program has begun to get through into something that you probably didn't expect to hear or perform until it was asked for. So what exactly is it?
Well, the piece that I'm going to be performing is a concertino for tuba and string orchestra by a Dutch composer, Jan Kurtzier. I was first exposed to his music when I was in graduate school at University of Illinois. I heard an undergraduate student play his sonatina for a tuba and piano. And I was just struck by the immediacy of the music. I mean, it was immediately appealing. He writes really idiomatically for the tuba. You get to experience that sense of it's very well-crafted music, but there's a little bit of wit in there, which I think is probably why I was drawn to that. And I ended up writing my doctoral project was on his works for solo tuba. He's written a ton of music for brass chamber works, well over 100. He's no longer living, but his music just really made an impact on me. And this particular piece was on one of my doctoral recitals, and I've never gotten to play it with orchestra before, and I'm really excited to share it with everybody. I hope that the orchestra will enjoy playing it and that the people will enjoy listening.
Yes, but is there something extra that has drawn it to you and what you feel when you play it? Are these aspects of the composer in a way that's different from other pieces that you've heard in the similar sort of ensemble?
I suspect that a lot of it for this particular piece is, and it, just for this particular composer, the imaginative way that he combines sophistication and humor, right? A really famous tuba player years ago, I think this started with him, said that there are two types of songs in the world. There are pirate songs and love songs, and everything could be categorized in that. Some people may disagree with that. You may say that there are songs and dances, and I think we see that and hear that in this particular piece. The first movement is definitely very much a pirate song, and in the last movement, it's very much a Bavarian dance, Bavarian rondo. And we hear a lot of the humor in that one, because near the end, when there's some play back and forth between the orchestra and the soloist, it comes to a stop, and then we start playing some version of the clarinet polka. It's just, where did this come from, right? So there are things that the thing I think that I really like about it is that there are things that are immediately appealing to an audience. But there's also something for the musician to sink their teeth into, and that can be a really delicate balance. That, you know, as a composer, your music is not thought of as trite. Well, he's just joking around, right? But there's really some really good meat in this piece as well.
Because you mentioned humor, and obviously, the conversation we've had so far is an essence for you in a lot of what you do, as well as what you play and what you listen to.
Yes, it is. I enjoy life. You know, I get down just like anybody else. We get discouraged, but when I have those times in my life, I'm reminded of the words of an old hymn that you're to count your many blessings, name them one by one, and it will surprise you what the Lord has done. Counting those blessings, you know, every time I get frustrated, man, I've been so blessed and so many things going right. And then it just really, that really helps things a lot, right?
In this piece, what do you get from the orchestra as a soloist?
That is a really interesting question. I think it helps. I can feed off of the energy from the orchestra. And I've not performed this one with orchestra before, but I have performed other things where I've like the Vaughan Williams Tuba Concerto, where I've done it with piano numerous times. And then when I get to do that with the orchestra, it's completely different because of the sonorities, the tonal qualities, and the energy from the orchestra I get to feed off of. And I think this one, even though it's a concerto, which we normally think of just an orchestral accompaniment and a soloist, I think this one is very much a give and take. This is not just, you know, boom chick in the background, and I'm going to play this solo. There's a lot of conversation going on, particularly in the first and third movements. I think you hear that immediately with you know, the orchestra. It almost is like an antecedent consequent relationship to a phrase, where they ask a question and I answer, or I ask a question and they answer.
And it's the sort of thing that makes you look at your instrument a little differently afterwards.
It certainly does. It's always been my goal when I perform, I can't say always, I shouldn't use absolutes, but I've definitely the last 20 years or so, I want people to forget that I'm playing tuba, and that... So I consider myself a musician first, and a musician that expresses themselves through the tuba. Because unfortunately, I mean, there are stereotypes with every instrument, right? But if someone asks me what I do and I say I'm a tuba player, that brings up a certain paradigm in their mind, and it's generally not a positive one, right? But if I tell them I'm a musician, that's a little different. Sometimes that's not positive in people's minds either. Okay. But certainly much more positive than the other. And I'm not embarrassed to play the tuba at all. It's my voice, but I want people to forget about that, you know, and just listen to the music. Let's just experience this music together.
And something like that will surprise us all, probably.
Well, I hope so. When I've performed before in for audiences that are not used to hearing the tuba beyond, again, much like go back to the marching band. I don't mean that in a negative way at all, but there's a certain role that a tuba has in a marching band and a role that I have in an orchestra, which primarily is the bass voice of the brass choir, right? But in this instance, coming out front, people are not used to that. I didn't know tuba could play a melody. And it's still surprising to me. I mean, how can you not know that? Mm-hmm. I have the same number of valves, sometimes more than some of the other brass instruments that you hear them play melodies all the time. It's just shocking to me that we're dealing with that now. You know, in 1954, 55, somewhere in there, Vaughan Williams wrote his tuba concerto. The instrument had been around since 1835, okay? Been playing melodic material in orchestra mm-hmm. Parts. It's still very shocking. I had a friend one time say to me at church, he said, I said something to my wife on the way to church this morning that I never thought I would say. I was like, what in the world could this be? And he said, I sure hope Brother Ed brings that tuba to church this morning. It's like, okay, well, like I said, I feel it. When you play, I feel it like right here.
That's great. I mean, that work could be better.
It was a positive thing, yeah. Right?
So. Music, yes. But a similar thing happened with the chief.
Oh, the string bass.
String bass, yes. Yeah. When he played the soloist at the same church where you'll be playing it, that he's a tall guy and he lifted up his instrument as though it was a toy in many eyes of many people because they'd never seen it outside the group.
Right.
And it makes a difference when it's the one who's on show and this is what you've got. And you've found a setting for it that none of us will have heard before. And I think all of this becomes an extremely exciting evening.
Well, I hope it will be. And it is different if you I think about playing a string bass, playing a solo or tuba. It's like music from the back row, right? we're not normally up there. And for string bass and tuba, we're playing generally in an area that people don't hear a lot, right? That's why I have to work again with my students a concept that I call explain the music. I have to explain it very, very well, like the articulation, all of those things, because of where we are on the sonic spectrum. People are not used to listening to music down there. When we're listening to music on the radio, most people are not contrabasses in pop music, right? they're usually listening to a soprano or a tenor. So when we get down into that register, it's difficult for people to hear. And I think they're hopefully pleasantly surprised most of the time that the tuba or the string bass can do these things. Because it can be an incredibly agile instrument.
Doesn't seem possible to use the word agile.
Well, the instrument can be agile. I'm not very agile when I'm carrying it around, for sure.
That was Ed Owen, who will be on stage with his tuba to delight and enjoy and influence the third and final Inc. Intimate Neighborhood Concert of the 1718 season, set for 7 p.m. May the 3rd. In St. James United Methodist Church, Pleasant Valley. For tickets, call the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra box office, 666-1761. And that concludes the program for this week. Please join us next weekend at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UA Little Rock Public Radio.